Esto es Naturaleza y Comunidad de la Pachamama. Hoy día tenemos dos invitados. Ellos trabajan para Seven Generation Fund. Nos va a explicar un poco sobre la organización y también su propia experiencia trabajando en esta organización. Vamos a comenzar por Luis. ¿Podrías contarnos tu experiencia, tú mismo, tu nombre completo, cómo es que empezaste a trabajar en Seven Generation Fund, tu propia experiencia?
Sí, claro. Gracias. Mi español es así, y por la razón de claridad voy a hablar en inglés.
Sí.
Yeah. So, my name is Lewis Gordon. I am the program director for the Seventh Generation Fund for Indigenous Peoples. Mm-hmm. And I am a Chicano person living up here in Wiat Territory, far north California. I was a student here at Humboldt State University, where we're recording right now.
Yeah.
And my major was Native American Studies. It took me a little while to find that major.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that I did, because my interests were history, culture, sociology, mm-hmm. ecology, all these different things that are really integrated into that program mm-hmm. of study. And in that program, I realized that my advisor and one of my instructors were both former staff members or former volunteers of the Seventh Generation Fund. And I really looked up to both of them and learned a tremendous amount from both of them. And I figured that if they were both involved in this organization, then I better go over there and see what they're doing. And it just happened that the office was only 5 minutes from my house at the time. So I stopped in 2011 just to see if I could volunteer and help out.
Mm-hmm.
I figured I'd do anything. I'd make coffee and file things and just whatever I needed doing.
Yeah.
And from there, I ended up working at the front desk and then part-time and then full-time. And now I oversee the grant programs for the Seventh Generation Fund.
Oh, wow. That's a good experience.
Yeah, it was really great because when I started as a volunteer when I was a student, everything that I was learning in school at the time really helped me understand the job and the work and the history and a little bit of the culture of the people that we were working with mm-hmm. at the time. And everything that I was doing on the job directly translated to me having more context and knowledge and experience for what I was learning about in school. So it was mutually supportive, and it was really great. And I eventually wrapped up my degree a few years later, and I'm still at Seventh Generation Fund mm-hmm. and still learning every single day.
Yeah, I bet, you know, sometimes at a university you receive all these, readings, but you put in practical way working with a Seventh Generation mm-hmm. Fund, mm-hmm. this organization. And what about you, Johnny?
I first started volunteering with Seventh Generation Fund back in 2014. And during that time, I was studying social work at the time, and I just switched my major from English to social work. Estaba estudiando inglés primero, pero después de un tiempo ya no sentí que mi corazón estaba en mis estudios, y por esa razón cambié a estudiar social work. Y cuando cambié mi major, tenía de ir a encontrar una organización, una comunidad para dar mi tiempo. Y esa organización fue la séptima. Y comencé trabajando con Luis durante ese tiempo. Y me gustó el trabajo, me gustó la misión, me gustó la gente que estaba con quien estaba trabajando. Y también me gustó los sueños y también la dedicación que el equipo tenía para los pueblos originarios de este continente. Y no me quería salir. me quería estar ahí y quería encontrar una manera para establecerme con la séptima. Y así es que comencé primero dando mi tiempo así. Pienso que eran unas 20 horas a la semana. Y después de eso me ofrecieron un trabajo. Y desde ahí ya ahí terminó la historia.
Sí, recuerdo que tienes tu perrita.
Sí, Lady.
Lady.
Sí, siempre llego con mi mascota.
Sí, es linda parte de la organización.
Sí. Comenzó una vez solo, cada viernes pregunté una vez, ¿no? Oh, sí puede llegar Lady a la oficina. Y me dijeron, oh, sí, no hay problema. Y comenzó solo una vez a la semana. Y después pregunté, oh, sí puede llegar Lady el lunes y el miércoles también. Ándale, pues tres veces a la semana. Y ya después de ahí, no sé cuándo era, pero ya paré de preguntar porque... Mm-hmm. El equipo tenía mucho, mucho cariño para Lady Y ahora pues cada día que llego a la oficina con Lady, pues les reciben con mucho amor y a veces le...
Sí, es verdad. Y es muy educada también.
Sí, también. Yeah. Eso sí es cierto.
Yeah. In this radio, I really like to ask about your own experience working. How do you start? I think it's very important that. Would you like to talk about what are the visions and objetivos of Seven Generation Phone in the long term? You know,
our statement of purpose and reason for existence, which is our formerly called our mission statement. We realized that the word mission and everything that's contained in the context of the word mission, whether it's military or religious or whatever it is, was not a good match for us. So we are not calling it that anymore. But our reason for existence is to advance the sovereignty and self-determination of Native nations. So that manifests itself in an infinite amount of ways. So we give small grants, mostly up to $10,000. But this year we're starting a new program where for some projects working on women's issues and some projects working on women's issues in Alaska specifically, we're giving up to $50,000. But all these different projects advance sovereignty and self-determination in different ways, either whether working on water issues, whether they're working on treaty rights, working on using culture to increase the health of their people, whether it's through dancing, singing, self-knowledge, people healing themselves and helping others heal from intergenerational trauma and the impacts of colonization. They're all doing different things, working on protecting rivers, protecting children, protecting songs, ceremonies, protecting sacred places, all these different things. And they're all so beautiful. And so we exist to provide a little bit of funds, support, sometimes advice or advising guidance to community groups on the ground that are working to solve, to Native community groups on the ground, they're working to solve problems and address issues in their own communities. So we only support Native groups, and we only support Native groups that are working for themselves and with themselves to make things better. So for instance, we wouldn't support one Native group saying, oh, those other people on the other side of the country, they're so poor and pitiful and they need blankets and shoes or things like that. That's, understand that, desire or drive to want to help other people. But for us, we're mostly focused on helping people help themselves.
Oh, yeah. You also shared that the Seven Generation is working for in Alaska and also in Canada. In which countries is working now?
Yeah. So maybe a little bit later, Johnny can talk about the affiliate program. Mm-hmm. But so most of our projects that we fund and that we support, that we work with, most of them are based in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's not because we believe in maintaining the colonial territorial integrity of the borders of the United States as they are now, but it's because of our funding. We don't receive any state or federal dollars. Most of the funding that we receive is from private foundations, and most of those foundations are focused on addressing projects in the borders of the United States. So a lot of times we're limited by that, but our vision of who is a Native person isn't limited to being a federally recognized card-holding Native American person or group or entity or tribe. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, even in the U.S., there's a lot of tribal groups that are not recognized, that as far as the federal government is concerned and as far as federal Indian law is concerned, they're no more Indian than anybody else, just a non-Native person on the street, despite the fact that they're on their ancestral territories, they're living however they're living, and that it gets broken down sometimes by individual, sometimes by families, sometimes by entire nations or entire groups. Mm-hmm. So most of our funding is in the U.S., but we do support projects for sure in Canada. We support a handful of projects in Alaska as well. And then at times, so-called Latin America or countries and nations to the south, Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Ecuador, at times Colombia. But that's not on a large scale or ongoing or regular basis. So it's a little more sporadic.
Yeah. And also you say like about some indigenous tribes, they are not recognized by mm-hmm. the state. Like Karuk tribe is one. Karuk tribes.
Yeah. Well, the Karuk tribe is recognized, but they don't have a reservation or a land base is the deal with them. But there's other groups. Like, for instance, there's most of the Chumash groups in Southern California are not. So that's in the area of like Ventura, Santa Barbara, getting up into San Luis Obispo counties. I think there's only one recognized Chumash group, and that's the San Ynez Band. But the rest of them all up and down the coast are not considered Indian at all. And there's other examples, the Winnemuwintu in Northern California. You know, there's examples all over the U.S. of whole tribes and sometimes bands or like subdivisions of tribes that are not recognized.
Yeah. And also, I think it's great that Seven Generation Fund is, you know, trying to do projects in different countries, like you say, in Ecuador, El Salvador. I think most of the problems of South America with indigenous people is a lack of resources that we don't have. For example, in my village, you know, we are dealing with mining corporations. Mm-hmm. What is lacking there is how to unite all these indigenous people, and sometimes the lack of resources, really. And I think it's great that when there are these organizations supporting in any ways, I think it's I really respect when I hear my first time Seven Generation Fund and is working with, you know, with other groups in South America. It was really, for me, very interesting. I think it's good work that Seven Generation is doing. My other question, it was, which kind of projects right now Seven Generation is helping here in Humboldt County?
Well, off the top of my head, we have the affiliate program. And the affiliate program, we house around 33 projects all across the indigenous world that are doing a number of things. Some of them are doing cultural revitalization, language revitalization, land defense, water protection. They're doing advocacy, they're doing education. Locally, we do have the Warrior Institute up in Hoopa, and they work with youth around exercise, physical fitness, and incorporating traditional values. We're also helping sponsor California Kitchen. And California Kitchen was a project or a camp that originated from Standing Rock. And they were a kitchen in camp feeding a number of different people. The individuals that were responsible for that camp came back home after their time there, and they wanted to continue to do the good work that they were doing in camp of feeding the people. So we're working with California Kitchen, Warrior Institute, two local affiliates that are doing amazing work. And
yeah, and there's a third out on Hoopa, the language school.
Ishtuk Language Center up in Hoopa. And they're revitalizing their culture, and they're rock stars too. Jeanette Nelson, Brian Nelson, and a handful of other individuals who are teaching young children their language, which we know it's super important to continue and making sure that language it's not lost, considering that this is 2019 is the year of indigenous languages.
Yeah, and long-term, just historically, you know, locally we funded a lot of the projects that were involved in the revitalization of North Coast canoe culture up here. So a lot of the first canoes that were built during the 80s and 90s, during that sort of that time period of cultural renaissance up here in the North Coast of California, those were either funded or sponsored or helped out by the Seventh Generation Fund. We funded community gardens out in Hoopa recently. We funded, we helped out the Wiat tribe with some of the sacred site protection that they were doing on their island in the bay here. So yeah, there's a whole wide range of activities from food, language, culture, forest protection, sacred site protection, all kinds of stuff.
Sí, y para también dar otra un comentario, la séptima nunca se inyecta o va a imponer nuestras ideas. Nunca vamos a llegar a una comunidad o vamos a llegar a a un lugar para decir, nosotros tenemos una idea para ustedes. No, nunca vamos a llegar para decir, sabemos qué ustedes necesitan. Nosotros siempre estamos de la posición y de la opinión que, o sea, la comunidad necesita ayuda, lo va a buscar. Y nunca vamos a llegar nosotros para decir, mira, aquí tenemos esta beca de apoyo, pero necesitan ustedes hacer las cosas a nuestra manera y no a su gusto. Y trabajando así da más vida a la idea de la determinación, ¿no? Uh-huh. Y solo quería comentar en eso.
No, eso es la verdad, porque muchas comunidades, incluso cuando hablamos del término desarrollo, ¿no? El desarrollo viene del Estado y de las políticas internacionales, y cuando llega a un país, obviamente impone eso, ¿no? ¿Qué significa desarrollo? Por ejemplo, en mi pueblo, hay varios pueblos, neighbor. Entonces, en uno de los pueblos, la minería ya está ahí por 10 años y han construido casas de material noble, de cemento. Entonces, eso significa desarrollo. Entonces, la gente dice, este pueblo no está desarrollado porque no hay material noble, no está construido las casas de material noble. Y lo que pasa es que en los Andes hace mucho frío y con el material noble la gente no quiere vivir ahí. Sí. Es mucho frío. Ellos quieren la forma que antes han construido, que es de adobe, de piedra, con paja. Y bueno, pero tienen ellos esa idea que fue impuesto, que supuestamente somos menos desarrollados si las casas son de adobe o de paja. Entonces, y eso es impuesto, ¿no? Entonces, el gobierno... Muchas organizaciones a través del gobierno vienen a esas poblaciones e imponen esas decisiones, ¿no? Dicen, queremos desarrollar la población y tenemos estos términos, ¿no?, que quieren seguir. Sí. Es bueno lo que tú clarificas de que la Seven Generation Fund ve las necesidades de la gente, cómo quiere cambiar, en qué manera quieren desarrollarse ellos mismos.
Sí, y sabemos que el desarrollo que los europeos nos quieren imponer a nosotros, porque esto es... El capitalismo no previene de nuestras comunidades, ¿no? Es una idea de ellos. Y creo que el capitalismo siempre va a correr contra nuestras ideas de un balance, una balancia, ¿no?
Balance.
Sí. Creo que no es la idea que nosotros somos salvajes o la idea que nosotros no podemos... vivir una vida buena y saludable sin el capitalismo, creo que es un error. Y creo que, o si vamos a continuar en esa avenida de pensando que el capitalismo nos va a salvar, creo que es un error bien grave. Y sabemos que el capitalismo no se puede mantener. Va a llegar a un punto cuando sí, ya no, nuestros ríos van a estar sucios y no se puede tomar el agua del río. Va a llegar al punto en donde ya no va a poder crecer el maíz. Ya no podemos pescar en los ríos porque tienen enfermedades los pescados y el salmon. Y solo quería decir que estoy de acuerdo porque hay muchas veces que hay gente que nos pregunta, ¿por qué no están dando becas para apoyar el desarrollo económico? Y a veces nosotros estamos de la opinión que a veces una comunidad no necesita el desarrollo económico, sino ellos necesitan el desarrollo cultural más importante. Que pensamos que la ceremonia es más importante de teniendo dos personas con un carro o con una nueva tele, ¿no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the main reasons why I'm so happy to work for Seventh Generation Fund, because the type of grant funds that we support and the philosophy behind who we support and why we support them, like Johnny was just sharing, is so different from 99% of other philanthropic dollars of money that's out there that's, by these big foundations or could be coming directly from the companies that are causing the harm or from the states that are benefiting from the extraction of resources from people's lands. The reason why we would support a project is because we want to help nations and we want to help pueblos, we want to help people be who they are in the most authentic and real and healthy and sustainable way. And a lot of other funding out there, and the field of philanthropy really as a whole is just a not exclusively, but largely is a continuation of the process of acculturation, of trying to tell people that they can't have their own identities, that they're part of the state identity, or that they have to assume an identity that isn't who they are, or who they want to be. We're telling people that they can be Native, they can be Indian, they can be K'iche' or Quechua or mm-hmm. Karuk or wherever, mm-hmm. And do it in a way that honors that history, that honors their ancestors, that allows them to take care of their lands and take care of the lands for the future generations. And that's where our name comes from. The seventh generation is a principle that's written into the Six Nations or Haudenosaunee Confederacy that says that in every deliberation, in every decision that we make, we have to consider the impact on the next seven generations to come. So it's not just your children, your grandchildren, it's your great, 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 great grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, for example, most of the philanthropy sometimes is co-opted by the corporations.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of money out there in philanthropy, and where is it all coming from? You know, it's interesting just economic and social history of the concentration of wealth that it gets so big that companies or individuals that, you know, date back to like the robber baron age, or were part of, you know, Standard Oil, or were part of the first people that went into the Amazon or the Andes looking for, or at least the first Americans, not the first Spanish.
Yeah.
Looking for resources to take and extract. It's the product of all that money that they extracted from other places that is now, a lot of times they're trying to say, oh, you know, we're trying to help these people. But a lot of times it's not given with that same cultural lens, or it's trying to further advance the positions of those oil companies, the mining companies, the companies based in the United States and Canada, in Europe. You know, that's kind of the reality. It's weird.
Yeah, I think when you share about how Seven Generation Fund is helping the self-determination of these indigenous nations, I think that is very, very important. Because for example, in my village, we didn't have any income before. I am talking about 15 years ago. So we didn't have any income and no estate, because even highway at the time we didn't have. So mostly the work that we did, it was very independent. Mm-hmm. Independent. We are very like free, you know. We have the land. We don't have fences. We manage the land communally. Everyone has, you know, their own place. We don't have homeless people. Actually, my first time I saw in Lima, in the city, where is people in the street? And they don't have house. And I was like, what? Mm. We have huge land. How is people doesn't have land? So in those communities, we don't have homeless people. Always we have this flexibility for someone. If they can make their own house, we build the house. So no one can be without house because we have the land. So now we have struggles with the government, because the government want to manage the land because there are resources. And there is these laws, institutions helping also the, and corporations helping the government, and we are having these struggles. Who will manage the land? So we have now the law that says we own la superficie, the surface of the land, but inside belongs to the government. Mm. So we are like, what? We never, you know, we didn't know what the government will bring when the first time they built the highway. Mm-hmm. We thought, oh, government want to help us or whatever, but they have their other, you know, they want to put a state government in these small communities and slowly bring corporations to these places. Now people is just becoming like working on the mining. Now everything is money. And that strongly affect the community, because becoming very dependent for food, same, even for anything, everything, you know. Y the other in the huge aspect, what happened is those minerals, usually in the Andes, we have a lot of minerals like gold, silver. So those minerals is taken from this land and they bring like in the old times to Europe, to China. Actually now to China, they are están exportando. They are exporting to China. And so China give like added economically different product like, you know, cables, whatever they produce. And they send us and we buy that. So it's just, we spend so much energy. It's not, even it's not sustainable, all this, you know, process that they are doing. And we need to buy in the end. So why, you know, why we can't even ourselves build that, you know, or because the resource belong to Peruvian people. That is what different is, for example, with Bolivia. Bolivia at least has, they nationalize their own industry. But like Chile, like Argentina, especially Peru, we don't have that. We don't have any national industry. It's just that the government is, you know, co-opted with corporations and coming and taking all these resources. So now we are having struggles because I think the most important for us, I realize over time, is the land. If we lost the land, we don't have anything. Like we become totally dependent for the government or anything.
Yeah,
and I think that I would like to ask a little bit about the history, what happened, for example, with indigenous people here, with indigenous tribes here in Humboldt County. Like, for example, how, you know, it was also Humboldt County, it was gold in the time. And
yeah, so that's a really long and really difficult history. But I think the main thing that I can share about that is starting with the formation of the state of California, which was 1850. And one of the first things that the state of California did after they were incorporated into the Union of the United States was pass the 1850 Act for Government and Protection of Indians, which did exactly the opposite of what the name of the act was. And so what this did was establish, I would say, like an apartheid, but it's really like worse than apartheid system, where an Indian person could be cited for loitering, just being existing in any public place. If it was here on the plaza in Arcata or anywhere else, if they weren't working for a white person, they could be cited and they could be jailed, and then they could be auctioned off to the highest bidder as indentured servants. This happened a lot with men, women, children, especially children. They were really a large part of the formational economy, especially of Northern California, was Indian labor, slave labor, indentured servant labor, and also for, you know, for sexual gratification of men who would buy people and have them at their houses at a time when there was very few women in Northern California. And at a time with very few white women, at a time when no white person could be cited or could be fined for harming a native person, whether that was murder or rape or assault or whatever it was, no native person, even if they spoke English at the time, which would have been very rare in the early days, even if they spoke English, they could not testify against a white person in the court of law in the state of California. So this really established a whole system where it was like doubly or triply advantageous to kill people, take their land, steal their children, and auction them off, or to buy them. So that's the beginning of that whole history. And from there, it goes into all kinds of other, I mean, you can kind of follow the timeline of federal Indian law from the 1870s, 1880s, 90s, the Dawes Act, all kinds of other things that happened that affected Indians everywhere. But I think in Northern California, the fact that Californians as a whole, due to the education system and due to the ignorance perpetuated by the educational system, are really proud about entering the Union and not being a slave state, I think, right before the Civil War, because California came a state 1850, and there's sort of this, like, you know, thought that California is better than the rest of the United States that had slaves and was killing Indians, because the story of the natives in California is almost completely left out of the public education curriculum. So that's just a little bit about the history of Northern California.
Yeah, and also I wonder the reservation, for example. What is that? For example, we don't have, like, in South America, we don't have, like, reservations, but we have the land. But still we are fighting. So reservation is the land given by the state, right?
Yeah. So the idea is it's land held in trust. I'm not sure if what's the right translation for that. It's land that quote-unquote belongs to the tribes, but it doesn't really belong to the tribes. It belongs to the federal government because it's managed by the federal government. Mm. It's under the federal system as opposed to the state system. So different reservations were established differently. Some were established via treaty. Some were established via executive order. Some were established and then erased and then reestablished. Mm-hmm. And it's really different wherever you go, many different places. And then once that land base was established, then there is a period of, I'll say 70 years, when the federal government was actively diminishing those lands and chipping away at them and cutting holes in them and redistributing lands, community lands, to individuals, and then selling off the surplus to white farmers. But when you look at the time, the decisions made by the administrators, the Indian agents at the time, a lot of the decisions of who got land were really racially motivated. And a lot of times the Indians always got the worst end of the deal.
Mm-hmm. I think that did happen in the history here in North America and Canada. And we are in this process in South America. Most of indigenous people, we are fighting over that. Like how we can keep the land, you know? Y bueno, más bien, muchas gracias por compartir la experiencia. Tú, Johnny, ¿quieres comentar algo sobre cómo las organizaciones y también los tribus en Norteamérica quieren unificarse con los indígenas de Sudamérica, quizás para futuros proyectos en el futuro? ¿Cómo ves eso tú?
Sí, creo que estamos en un momento en historia que es bien importante para reconocer nuestras raíces indígenas, porque creo que hay mucho espacio para tener esas relaciones entre los tribus de Norteamérica y también los pueblos originarios de Sudamérica. A veces, no sé por qué, pero no se miran ojo a ojo. Se miran, a veces hay opiniones o que nosotros somos indios y los pueblos indígenas del Sudamérica no son indígenas o no son indios. Native Americans.
Really?
Y sí, y a veces, y también ese sentido también es también entre los tribus aquí de Norteamérica. Ellos dicen, no, nosotros somos más indígenas o somos más esto. Y creo que es un error porque, o si no nos estamos unificando como pueblos originarios de este continente, vamos a perder. Vamos a perder la lucha contra el capitalismo. Vamos a perder nuestros derechos a nuestros territorios. Vamos a perder nuestro derecho a la autodeterminación. Vamos a perder nuestras decisiones en cómo queremos educar a nuestros hijos y cómo vivir nuestras vidas también. Y creo que la lucha necesita más ayuda y necesita una colaboración. Uh-huh. Entre los tribus del norte y el sur. Y creo que hay mucho de aprender y se puede ofrecer mucho apoyo entendiendo esas relaciones entre pueblos. Como lo mismo como los estados tienen sus tratos, nosotros también mismos tenemos ese derecho a hacer nuestros propios tratos entre pueblos originarios y los tribus de Norteamérica. Y creo que tenemos que hablar de la idea de ser latino y ser hispano, porque creo que también eso no ayuda al movimiento indígena. Hay tanta gente que se identifica como latino o hispanic, y creo que eso es un error también intelectual y un error de política también. It's a political mistake to be identifying as latino or hispanic. Solamente cuando nosotros comenzamos a reclaim nuestras raíces indígenas, podemos cambiar la conversación sobre el desarrollo económico y todas las conversaciones que nosotros tenemos, porque cuando estamos hablando de nuestra identidad como gente indígena, cambia la conversación de los territorios, porque ahora no somos solo un grupo de gente, una clase de gente, ¿no? Ahora somos gente que tenemos derecho al territorio. There's just too much at stake. As brown people and as indigenous people, we have a lot more to offer to that conversation, but only if we unify around this idea that we are indigenous to this continent and we have ways of being and understanding and being in relationship with the territory in a way that creates a balance and isn't necessarily resting on complete resource extraction. Mm-hmm. We have the right to self-determination, and that conversation is a lot different from one you would have with a state that says, okay, let's talk about your civil rights, right? Mm-hmm. Our rights don't come from anyone but ourselves. We have inherent human rights. There's a lot of room for collaboration and reclaim those indigenous roots. Reclaim, be indigenous.
Mm-hmm. Even in the academia, you will see how those terms is politicized, you know, mm-hmm. who is indigenous, who is not. A year ago, I was doing my interviews for my thesis in my community, in different communities. And one of the questions, it was, do you identify as indigenous? Even I asked them in Quechua. So what happened is they don't know the word indigenous. What is indigenous? But they remember Indian, because before the Spanish, we used to call India.
Mm-hmm.
Indios. Uh-huh. They say, you mean Indian? Indio? Yeah, I told them kind of like that. And they told me like, oh, no, I can speak a little bit of Spanish. So I don't think so. I am Indian, because they speak just Quechua, most of them. Even my father, no, my dad, the same thing. Because the government, they put us the name peasants. We are peasants, campesinos, mm-hmm. peasants. So those communities, before it was indigenous communities, and the government changed that to peasant communities, as a peasant communities have more rights, more status. So that all these people, instead of recognize us as Indian, they recognize us as peasant people, which is campesinos.
Sí.
It's very, so the term of how is all the time changing and playing the identity of these people. Because if I ask my dad how to you recognize, they will say, what do you mean? Like, I am peasant, he will be saying, I am peasant. But if you say Indian, like, mm-hmm. es negativo para ellos.
Sí.
Y muchos de ellos no reconocen, no saben qué es la palabra indígena.
Sí.
Entonces, y ahí un poco yo realicé que para decir quién es indígena o indígena, ahí estamos el lenguaje, nuestra tierra, nuestras costumbres, nuestras tradiciones. Sí. Toda esa ceremonia hace que tú seas, que pertenezcas a un terreno, no simplemente un término, quién es más indígena o quién es, no es indígena. Y es bien complicado, especialmente en Latinoamérica, porque ahí tenemos diferentes mulatos, hispanizados, que lo llamamos, y muchos que venimos de la sierra, de los pueblos, de los Andes y de la selva, recibimos mucho racismo en la ciudad.
Sí,
muchos
claro.
de nosotros hemos trabajado en casas y recibimos racismo de personas que supuestamente son hispanizados. Ellos sí se reconocen hispanizados.
Sí.
Y hay mucho racismo de explotación.
Sí. Jamás se van a identificar como indígena.
No.
Son urbanos.
Sí. Y también porque tenemos un acento un poquito distinto en español, porque hablamos quechua. Y el español nos sale medio con un fuerte acento. Entonces nos dice, ustedes son de la sierra. Y eso hace que ellos, ustedes deben trabajar duro. Y nos hace trabajar duro en casas, nos explota. Y porque no tenemos casa en la ciudad, tenemos que trabajar y así terminar nuestra educación. Así muchos de nosotros hemos terminado nuestra educación y recibimos mucha explotación, ¿no? De ese término. Y yo vi en la academia que muchos académicos están debatiendo sobre indígena y todo, pero en la realidad es otra, ¿no? In the international level, in the academia, is talking about a lot about indigenous, but in the reality, we don't have that. They don't know.
Sí.
It's because I think it's mostly, it's lacking project, it's staying in contact with the people, with those communities. But slowly, I hope, you know, now we have strong, you know, la globalización ha llegado en todas partes. Entonces, es algo que nosotros no podemos evitar. Porque, ¿qué vamos a hacer? No, porque muchos de la gente, por ejemplo, del pueblo, ellos quieren educar a sus hijos y la educación cuesta.
Sí.
Y si no tienen un ingreso, ¿cómo van a financiar, educar a sus hijos? Y por eso a veces muchos de ellos también tienen que aceptar la minería porque es la única opción. Estamos hablando de geográficamente son montañas donde no podemos producir agricultura intensiva o ganadería intensiva. Entonces tenemos que nosotros ver otras formas, qué recursos hay. Y the only resource that we found is there is a lot of minerals there since the Spanish. But we don't take anything about this resource. It's just a visa. Resource going to the to the city. I don't know who is taking advantage about that. So that sometimes, you know, we can see that people living in the same or war situation because now with the migration, because the mining corporations bring other people to the village. We never have, you know, now it's a problem, big problem with alcoholism, because now it's money. People is buying those kind of things like food. Before we used to eat like natural food, like we didn't have sugar, no oil, nothing, you know, processed food. But now slowly everything is changing strongly in these communities. I think one aspect, as you say, is education. No? Education perhaps unrecognized or culture and what really matters to us, it will be important.
So Johnny mentioned the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. And that is such a core component to everything that we do. And really all of our programs, everybody that we support, all of our grants, everything is in line with that declaration, which lays out minimum human rights standards, human rights standards for Indigenous peoples that say that they have their right to self-identify. Indigenous people have the right to access their territories. They have the right to not be removed from their territories. Mm-hmm. They have the right to their foods, traditional medicines. They have right to media in their own language. They have all these different rights. And so this instrument is out there, and it's been signed on by every country now. But yeah, it's an instrument out there that lays out, like I said, minimum human rights standards. It's, you know, not common knowledge for most most people, say most American, you know, United States citizens or even, you know, native people and non-native people abroad. But everything that we do supports that declaration, supports the objectives of those articles.
Yeah, and I think that's super important too, just because if that's passed, that's kind of the framework under which I think a lot of the political aspect of the movement needs to use of Indigenous people. We got to teach ourselves, educate ourselves, and use the declaration to center the conversations around us and everything about us within that framework. They want to build that pipeline. They want to remove the coal, the copper, the silver, and ship it elsewhere. They want to cut down hundreds of acres of forest and timber to ship whatever.
Or move people off land.
Or remove off people off land. I mean, we have our rights to say no. You know, what's going on up in the Union Stoning Camp up in Canada right now, the people there are collectively saying they have the Canadian government has no right, has no consent, more importantly, because that's part of the framework. Energy projects, you need to have the consent of the Indigenous peoples of that territory. And consent is completely different from consultation, right? Because they could say, hey, we came in, we talked to Johanna, and Johanna said, okay, but everyone else on campus said no, but we're going to go on what Johanna said, because that's a consultation. Hey, now we got bulldozers and all these things, equipment coming in to do that project.
That is really true. I think most of these communities, they can raise their standard of life. It just takes time, yes, but good things that we need to learn from them is if they find, if they create any technology, anything, is always shared with a community for everyone. It's not like here, anyone create new idea, technology, just, you know, everything. Ah, yeah, I'm going to sell you how much you need to pay me. Sometimes the globalization means like, oh, this community is poor. We are trying to help to bring in technology, whatever. But we have our technology too. We manage communally. Yeah, the economic pressure is very strongly right now. And I think it's very important to have the support of Indigenous people in the North. Perhaps in the future we can do some projects together. No, I think when you work together, you become more strong. I don't know, you have any project right now happening, you guys need any support, we have algo, tenemos a veces audiencias de México, de otros países que quieren hacer volunteer maybe on Seventh Generation Fund.
O sea, una persona quiere ayudar al movimiento indígena, uh-huh. tienen de comenzar primero en el territorio que están viviendo uno. Uh-huh. Nosotros no podemos decir, ah, esa persona en Oaxaca quiere ayudar al pueblo. Y nosotros los vamos a hacer el trabajo para ellos, para ponerlos en comunicación. Creo que a un nivel, cada persona, está serio que quieren ayudar al movimiento, tienen que hacer el trabajo. Y creo que en cada espacio de la sociedad, creo que hay trabajo de hacer con los pueblos originarios de este continente.
Exacto. Muchas gracias por el trabajo que ustedes están haciendo. Pienso que eso ayuda un montón, ¿no? Simplemente para tener contacto, como por ejemplo Centro del Pueblo. Sí. Centro del Pueblo es una forma también que está tratando de reclamar lo que es indígena sí. de Sudamérica. Y bueno, ha sido para mí un placer escuchar cuando Comprenda hablé sobre que hay un proyecto de trabajar con Seventh Generation Fund. Sí. Y bueno, saludamos realmente, saludo eso. Y hay muchas saludos cosas de aprender sí. aquí. Tengo un año más aquí en América y he aprendido bastante cosas, ¿no? Cómo ustedes están trabajando y cómo formar una organización, cómo hacer este trabajo de todos, ¿no? Porque, también en mi comunidad también tenemos una fuerte organización, cada comunidad tiene. Pero el problema es, a veces, con la economía que viene, con la globalización, todo eso va sí, cambiando claro. y hace más división. Y con la minería, peor aún.
Sí.
Pero es bueno tener en mente de que tenemos, en algún momento tenemos un soporte, donde sea, que no estamos solos.
Sí, y la séptima siempre está disponible a ayudar en la manera que nosotros podemos, en moviendo los recursos económicos a veces, a veces también son recursos de espíritu, uh-huh. son esfuerzos de apoyo que a veces sí ayuda en una manera en el movimiento.
Yes, I want to say that our website, if you're interested in more information, our website is 7, that's the number 7, GENFUND, 7genfund.org, y en español es el número 7, GENFUND.org.
Muchas gracias, chicos. De verdad, muchas gracias por esa energía que sí, siempre. Espero que regresen. La próxima vez estaremos aquí con Brenda.
Sí.
Y ustedes pueden venir, podemos hacer una charla. Muchísimas gracias por venir. Espero que no sea la última vez.
Sí, muchas
Nos
gracias
vemos.
A usted, sí.
Igualmente.
Adiós.